The great earthquake of 2010 has devastated Port-au-Prince, Haiti, and according to government estimates, left perhaps as many as 200,000 people dead and millions who are homeless and hungry. And out of this has poured all kinds of amazing stories of both greed and generosity. Some who steal food from the hungriest of all or take tents away from those who are trying to find some shelter as the rainy season soon comes. And then others who share a high-protein biscuit when they are desperately hungry themselves, or money that pours in from all around the globe, and volunteers who come for search and rescue. So how would you see yourself? Just all the time. Do you think of yourself most of all as someone who is greedy or as someone who is generous? Either way, you can find a friend in the story in the Old Testament book of 1 Samuel chapter 30, the story of the life and the biography of Israel's King David. David wasn't yet the king, but coronation was close. The sitting king, Saul, was into the last days, actually the last hours of his life before a battlefield death. It was a battle that David would not participate in. He and his small army were marching in precisely the opposite direction. They were Israelites who had been cast out of their own nation of Israel and had found asylum in the neighbor enemy nation of Philistia. But even after a year plus of relationship, the Philistine generals didn't really trust David and his men, at least didn't trust them enough to fight with Philistia against Israel in a great battle to take place in the valley of Jezreel. And so they were mustered out of the Philistine army, and they were sent on a march homeward to their hometown in Philistia of Ziklag. It took them 3 days to walk back home, never anticipating what they would find, and what they discovered totally shocked them in unexpected crisis. David and his men reached Ziklag on the third day. Now the Amalekites had raided the Negev and Ziklag. They had attacked Ziklag and burned it and had taken captive the women and all who were in it, both young and old. They killed none of them, but carried them off as they went on their way. When David and his men came to Ziklag, they found it destroyed by fire and their wives and sons and daughters taken captive. So David and his men wept aloud until they had no strength left to weep. David's two wives had been captured, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. Can you imagine coming back from a business trip or a family vacation? Driving down the interstate highway, taking your exit, going down a familiar road, turning onto your street, coming around the curve, getting ready to pull into the driveway, when you see your house as a charred ruin, there's nothing left. Just about everything is gone. No possessions, no furniture, no family photos, no tax records, no clothing, no money, nothing that was there. The children's toys are gone. You've lost everything. And your family? Your family's not there either. And so you hope for the very best and you assume that they have run over to a neighbor's house. But then you look around the neighborhood and their houses also have been burned and there is no one there. Everyone is gone. And then the worst gets worse. You realize that this was not a lightning strike. This wasn't a random kitchen fire. But rather, invaders have attacked your home, have kidnapped your family, have stolen your possessions, have set fire to your neighborhood, and everyone and everything is lost. And David and his men, they were devastated. They feared the absolute worst. that their wives and daughters had been raped, that their sons had been taken into slavery or had been killed, gone, forever gone. That the Amalekites had done this and then had escaped into the Negev, this vast desert, this isolated place, this trackless, making it virtually impossible to find where they had gone, either for a rescue or for revenge. And so grown men, veteran soldiers, just wept and moaned, and they fell down on the ground and they cried until no sound could come out of them. They were totally weakened, too weak to cry anymore. And where was God? David's God, whom they had followed, whom they had served, whom they had believed in. What good that day was faith, and where that day had hope gone? So do you know what they did? They turned against David, and they blamed everything that happened on him. David was greatly distressed because the men were talking of stoning him. Each one was bitter in spirit because of his sons and daughters. Don't ever think that rise and fall in popularity polls is something of a modern phenomenon only in American politics. This is something that is faced by every leader in every culture and every place. That one day there are friends and followers who think that the leader is the most wonderful person there is, and then he or she misspeaks or takes an unpopular position or maybe does absolutely nothing at all when leadership was expected to happen in a certain way. And those who were the most loyal of friends turn against the person. And that's precisely what happened to David. David, his own men were talking about stoning him, killing him. What David did next helps to understand why the Bible calls him a man after God's own heart. What David did next helps us to grasp why he has gone down as one of the greatest leaders in all of human history. But David found strength in the Lord his God. Then David said to Abiathar the priest, the son of Ahimelech, "Bring me the ephod." Abiathar brought it to him, and David inquired of the Lord, "Shall I pursue this raiding party? Will I overtake it?" "Pursue them," the priest answered. "You will certainly overtake them and succeed in the rescue." So where do you turn when crisis comes? Who do you go to in the worst of life's experiences? When you lose your job, when you get a tragic prognosis, when someone that you love more than words could ever express is dying or has died, when your dreams have been absolutely crushed, does that drive you to God? Or does that drive you away from God? Because it seems that people that face precisely the same circumstances take very different responses. Some, in the midst of the greatest crisis that they have ever been into, turn away from God and anything that is associated with him. And others are driven to him for a closeness never experienced before. David was heartbroken. He was so heartbroken that there was no strength left in him to weep. But David found strength in the Lord his God. He turned to God for the strength he couldn't get anywhere else. And for what to do next. He went to Abiathar, the priest, who was God's spokesperson in those days in Israel, and asked him to bring out the ephod. It was their method for discerning the will of God. And asked, should he and his men stay in Ziklag, or should they go out in pursuit of those who had done it? And the answer was to get up and to get going and to experience the divine blessing. It's not that God spoke out loud to David. That is something God seldom does. It's not that there was some big miracle. Their homes didn't suddenly turn from ashes back to what they once were. God simply did for David what God simply does for us. God met him in the ordinary circumstances of life. He and his 600 men had no idea where to go. So they just went. It was better to go somewhere than nowhere. It was better to do something, even though they didn't really know what to do, rather than to do nothing. But even that didn't quite work. As they went initially aimlessly, just out into the Negev desert, 200 of the men were so tired from the previous 3 days of march and so drained by the weeping over the loss of their families that they couldn't make it across a ravine. And so they dropped out. David had a mini army to start out with, just 600 men, and here he lost in one place a third of them. He's down to 400. And then God gave to David a straggler, someone who had been part of the Amalekite party and knew where they were. There out in the Negev, there was one person who knew where the enemy had gone and how to find them and where they were camped. Was that coincidence? I don't think so. This was God in their circumstances. David and the 600 men with him came to the Besor ravine, where some of them stayed behind, for 200 men were too exhausted to cross the ravine. But David and 400 men continued the pursuit. They found an Egyptian in a field and brought him to David. They gave him water to drink and food to eat, part of a cake of pressed figs and 2 cakes of raisins. He ate and was revived, for he had not eaten any food or drunk any water for 3 days and 3 nights. David asked him, "To whom do you belong and where do you come from?" He said, "I'm an Egyptian, the slave of an Amalekite. My master abandoned me when I became ill 3 days ago. We raided the Negev of the Kerethites and the territory belonging to Judah and the Negev of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag." David asked him, "Can you lead me down to this raiding party?" He answered, "Swear to me before God that you will not kill me or hand me over to my master, and I will take you down to them." He led David down, and there they were, scattered over the countryside, eating, drinking, and reveling because of the great amount of plunder that they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from Judah. You know, we live at a time when all of the satellite images and all of the information gathered by the CIA cannot find Osama bin Laden. So the whole world is the place of hiding, and we live at a time of amazing sophistication. So what were the chances that David and his men could find this raiding party out in this vast desert without any intelligence and without any modern technology? And God gave to them the one guy who knew where they were and could show them the way to find them right into the enemy camp. Now, I don't claim that God does that every time any of us face a crisis, but I would suggest that that is something God often does. That we are clobbered by tragedy, that we're beaten down so we can't stand up, that we're lying flat on our faces, totally drained in our emotions because of what we have experienced, and we turn to God in our desperation, and He gives to us supernatural strength. And as hard as it is to do, somehow we get up onto our feet and we start moving, not really knowing what direction to go. And then God shows up in the most unlikely person, in the most unexpected of ordinary circumstance, and He directs us to exactly where we need to go. David and his men were weak, but they were passionate. They were on a rescue mission for their wives and for their children, for their flesh and blood, the people they loved more than anyone else in the world. They must have been sorely tempted to attack that day, but they invoked a military discipline that they would wait until overnight and the first light of day so that they could have a surprise attack. And what most surely then took place was a vicious battle. Those were the days when war was not fought at a distance, but face to face and hand to hand, with spears that ran people through and with swords that cut off limbs and pierced abdomen. This was the kind of thing that if there were a camera there and we were showing it today, it would most surely be rated R because this was full of blood and gore. This was an ugly and disturbing violence. The battle was a military mismatch. David had 400 tired soldiers against those who had been triumphant in all of their previous attacks. We don't know exactly how many there were, but it's a good guess that it was 1,000 or thousands. We do know from one detail of the story that 400 of them escaped and ran away, and that the larger number was left behind for the rest of the battle. So David's army was clearly outsized. David fought them from dusk until the evening of the next day. None of them got away except 400 young men who rode off on camels and fled. David recovered everything the Amalekites had taken, including his two wives. Nothing was missing, young or old, boy or girl, plunder or anything else that they had taken. David brought everything back. He took all the flocks and herds, and his men drove them ahead of the other livestock, saying, "This is David's plunder. This is David's plunder. This is David's plunder." They got everyone back. They got everything back. Not one wife, not one son, not one daughter, not one grandparent was lost. And all of the stolen possessions were retrieved. How very good it was. And more than that, these Amalekites were professional raiders and thieves who had been going to lots of villages out in Philistia and Judah. So they had accumulated all kinds of other wealth as well. So David got it all. This was a huge return on investment, way more than had been stolen in the first place. And you know what happened to his approval rating? It skyrocketed. Because that's what often happens with leaders. Things are going well, and then the polls drop, and then suddenly some circumstance switches, and the poll goes soaring back up again. And since David was their leader, it was his choice. This was all his. He could do with it as he chose. So yesterday, he was completely broke. He had lost everything, and today he was a very wealthy man. So what should David do with all this newly acquired prosperity? It was only a day after the battle when David was forced to decide. That night, I am sure that they celebrated a reunion that was filled with tears of happiness. Husbands and wives hugged, and fathers tossed their children up into the air and played games with them in a happiness that was indescribable. And then they returned by way of the route that they had come. And as they returned back to Ziklag with all of this plunder being carried with them, they came across the 200 that had dropped out. Then David came to the 200 men who had been too exhausted to follow him, and who were left behind at the Besor ravine. They came out to meet David and the people with him. As David and his men approached, he greeted them. But all the evil men and troublemakers among David's followers said, "Because they did not go out with us, they will not share. We will not share with them the plunder we recovered. However, each man may take his wife and children and go." So this is an organized group who had a very definite set of politics and a very clear view of economics, that the 200 that didn't fight didn't get paid. It's pretty simple. They could have their wives and they could have their children, but they are not going to get any of the money. And well, I don't know, it kind of makes sense to me. Everybody was tired before that battle. The 400 that went on to fight, they had also marched 3 days from Jezreel to Ziklag. They also had lost their families. They also had wept until they were exhausted. But they went on. They pushed themselves. And these others, these dropouts, I mean, it's a simple and easy rule that lazy guys just don't get paid. Give the money and you know what will happen. You will set a precedent that you cannot follow. Give the money to them after they've dropped out. And the next time you have a battle, everybody's going to drop out on the assumption that they're going to get fully paid whether they go into the battle or not. So just don't do that. I mean, it just makes sense to me. Zero goes to these dropouts. Except David disagreed. David replied, "No, my brothers, you must not do that with what the Lord has given us. He has protected us and handed over to us the forces that came against us. Who will listen to what you say? The share of the man who stayed with the supplies is to be the same as that of him who went down to the battle. All will share alike." David made this a statute and ordinance for Israel from that day to this. So you can call David generous. Call David very generous. But listen to his words. His generosity was not primarily rooted in David's politics or in his economics or in his compassion. His generosity flowed out of his theology and out of his faith. He said, "No, my brothers, you must not do that with what the Lord has given us. God has protected us and handed over to us the forces that came against us." David believed that the victory had come from the hand of God and that this was God's money. This was God's plunder. It really didn't belong to David or to the men. You know, if we believe that it is because we are smarter and we work harder and that we are better persons than everybody else, that we have money and jobs and houses and cars and boats and vacations and reserves and resources, if we really believe that, then of course we're going to be greedy with it because we did what others did not do. And others, they're lazy and they're incompetent and they're not so smart, so they ought not get their share. But if I believe that everything that is good in my life is from the hand of a generous God, if I believe that job and house and car and money and resources are because God has richly blessed me, then like David and like God, I am far more likely to be generous. David didn't suggest that they get a 10% cut or a 20% cut. What David suggested was that they get an equal share with everyone else. Did they deserve it? I don't think so. Probably not. But this is not about whether they deserved it or not. It's about God and David and their generosity. Just recently, Charlene and I were in a restaurant, better named, unnamed, and the server, we didn't actually see her very much because she didn't really come around very much. And the service was, if you were there, you would agree, definitely inferior. And we got the check, and it was time to decide what should be the tip. And we decided, mostly on the basis of a recommendation from a generous wife, that that if 20% is the standard, then this server should get at least 20%. Not because the service was good, but because we choose to be generous. Now, let me just say that if David's generosity to this point bothers you, you really don't want to hear what he did next. When David arrived at Ziklag, he sent some of the plunder to the elders of Judah, who were his friends, saying, "Here is a present for you from the plunder of the Lord's enemies." So David started sending out money to everyone he knew. He started sending out money to the elders of Judah. Judah was the province where he had come from and gone into exile. They weren't at the battle. Let there be no doubt that there was no rational way you could give them any credit for what had happened. And then David experienced something that just happens to generous people. He felt so good about the money that was given to the 200, He felt so pleased and satisfied that he had done the right thing in sharing the money with the leaders of Judah. It was like on a roll, and he wanted to do more. It's kind of like, you know, eating your favorite potato chips or ice cream. You can't just get started. You do more and more. It's so good that once you get started, you can't stop. And it is that great principle that generosity leads to generosity. David sent it to those who were in Bethel, Ramoth, Negev, and Jatir, to those in Aurora, to Siphmoth, to Eshtemoa, to Rakhau, to those in the towns of the Jerahmeelites and to the Kenites, and to those at Hormah, Borash, and Achuk, and Hebron, and to those in all the other places where David and his men had roamed. So now David's sending out money and loot from his men and from his party to just about everyone that they had met in all of their travels together. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do if God unexpectedly brings some special prosperity or blessing to you? Say in the next 30 days, what are you going to do with it? So let's suppose that I pray for you to just unexpectedly get $10,000. Hey, as long as I'm praying, let's make it $100,000. Or I don't know, what do you want, a million? I mean, might as well ask. Or suppose you get a new job, or health when you haven't had health, or a surprise gift that only God could give. What are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with God's blessing? Be like David, generous, not greedy. Give it to those who need help. Give it to those who didn't do their share. Surprise others with your generosity. And so may God bless you so that you can bless others. God, this is a great truth. It's really about you, but it's evidenced in this servant of yours called David. God, evidence it in us as well, for we too are your servants. Give to us your blessing, and may we in turn generously bless others. In Jesus' name, amen.